This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to the doctors and me, Dr. D. Archer. A little bit of feedback. I'm sorry, I'm not on Okay. Can everyone hear me now?
I'm getting some feedback.
Okay. Back. I think my guests are also frozen.
I'll talk, and I don't think I have a feedback. Oh, yes, I do.
But hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
So, producer, we're having a bit of feedback. I don't know if it's the internet.
Can you guys hear me? Just because I don't think I'm actually needing my headphones.
I can hear you well.
Okay.
You hear me?
There you go.
Yep.
All right. The feedback's
on. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me. Can you hear us? Please let us know.
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
I can hear everyone. No feedback now. Okay.
All right, awesome. So welcome everybody to the show for another evening of the Doctors In With Me, Dr. Jennifer Archer. It seems like I'm having the one having internet troubles because I am seeing online that, the feedback is back.
I don't know if it's the internet. I know the electricity was off for most of the day.
Okay, it is coming back. I don't know if you guys can hear me.
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah. So, producer, we're having a bit of feedback.
I'm hearing it play back over and over.
I know the electricity was off for most of the day.
This again.
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, producer, we're having a bit of feedback. I don't know if it's the internet. I know the electricity.
That's a little bit more than feedback. That's almost like deja vu. It's like from 30 seconds ago.
Yeah, I hear a replay in the background.
It's like a deja vu.
Producer, are you... We've got a crazy start tonight.
It looks like the challenges.
Well, she's got tech support, Mark. We don't, so.
Having a bit of feedback.
That may be me. Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I can now, yeah. Oops, she's gone again.
Is Can hear me at all. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. You keep fading out, like you start and then it stops. And also the picture freezes. So I'm wondering if maybe the audience can hear us okay.
I'm wondering.
Some of us.
Okay, I can hear you, Dr. Bethel.
Okay.
And he says the audience can hear us. Okay, so okay. I'm just pleased. Everyone, welcome to the show. The doctor's in with me, Dr. D. We're gonna get right into it because we've lost some time, but we have a really exciting, recently we saw that the vaccines for the 5 to 11-year-olds have come in. And that really kind of made me start thinking, and I've always can go and do their research. And if they would like to, you know, do what they wanna do, they can do that and do the research for it. However, when it comes to using emergency use medication on children, I think clear that there are issues with that. The idea to vaccinate our children, what is the data, what is the information saying, and what we should be doing, what should we be thinking. I would say that after all this time, over 2 years, I thought that we would have come to some logical conclusions that we would stop doing narrative. But it seems like we're stuck. We're stuck on a train without brakes. And it's time to have that type of reflection as we talk about very young children, minor children, and what it means to vaccinate those children. And so we need to have that conversation. We need to dive in. We haven't been having these types of conversations nationally, on a national level. We haven't had a deep look. What I try to do, and some of the other doctors who are really interested have tried to bring this information to the forefront. But here we are in 2022, whilst the rest of the world is kind of pulling back from all of this and kind of analyzing the things that they've done, we are still making really odd decisions at this point. And I have to start thinking, where is the rationale in all of this? I'm just gonna a few articles and then I'm gonna bring in my guests. But the Wall Street Journal said in children, the risk of COVID-19 death or serious illness were low. New studies find, looking at a comprehensive research of the risk of coronavirus for 18 years and younger, they basically found that children are extremely slim risk of dying from COVID-19. According to most of the comprehensive studies to date, which indicate that the threat may be even lower than previously thought. Mm-hmm. Some 95%, the 469,982 children in England who were affected during the year examined by the researchers survived. That's what studies are showing. So the question is, there's no pandemic for children. There's no emergency for children. What is the rationale behind the policies this time? We're seeing that even the countries, the few that are vaccinating their children, very low vaccination rates, parents are very concerned, but yet we still have policymakers that are pushing us in that direction. So I question why the 24,000 doses for the children when the world is looking at the drug that we are using for COVID-19 and questioning whether the risks outweigh the benefits. Okay, an article in the New England Journal of Medicine looked at the effectiveness of BNT vaccine against Omicron in children 5 to 11 years old. And some of these findings are completely astounding, even though that the article concluded that the vaccination reduced the risk, but by what amount? We're talking about efficacy rates of 24%, 42%, 36.8%, well below the threshold for any viable drug that is supposed to be a vaccine or protective. So why aren't our officials looking at this data? why are they making the decisions that they are making? Countries like Jamaica, who are on in the region, because we're bragging that we are the first in the region to do this, they're not even really looking at this stuff. They're less vaccinated than us, 24%, and they're completely open. So pandemic has ended in most parts of the world, but here we are still dealing with this and now having to look at what effects will this have with our children. I have two really great guests with me tonight. I have first Dr. Kevin Bethel. He is a physician out of Freeport. He's been a part of this conversation from the very beginning. He is a supporter of the truth. He has been through this whole thing from various perspectives. We want to thank you, Dr. Bethel, for being here with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Also tonight with me, I have Mr. Mark Palmer. I had the great privilege of meeting Mark a while back in society circuit. We were all, you know, always fighting for the causes and looking out for the Bahamas. So Mark is really a player when it comes to justice and civil society. He's a father as well, and he has concerns. Thank you, Mark, for joining us tonight.
Very welcome. Happy to be here.
So I want to start first with, I guess, you, Dr. Bethel, on the things that I've said. You are a fellow physician. I want to get your thoughts because, you know, we have to be able to entertain all aspects of evidence. We have to be able to look at this in an unbiased manner, and we have to be able to tell the truth. If we can't tell the truth in medicine, if we can't tell the truth in science, then all is lost. And the science says that the policies are going in the wrong direction. Your thoughts, Dr. Bethel, overall on this whole idea of vaccinating children?
Well, I think that they're ignoring the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is that in all places that keep statistics, already at this point, 95 to 100% of the children's population have already had COVID-19 and thus have some level of immunity, okay? But even before that, there was already known that children do not get severe illness from this unless they have comorbid conditions that are basically the same as adults, diabetes and obesity. And certainly there are some children that need some protection. But the second, you know, 2,000-pound elephant that's in the room is treatment, effective treatment. We've always had effective treatment. And the treatment just gets better and better and better and more refined. But I will give a caveat later on about that because of, you know, some recent developments. But, you know, we have treatment. So what is the urgency to vaccinate for something that people already have natural immunity because they've already had prior infection exposure to, and particularly children? And secondly, we have cheap, affordable, effective treatment for. So where is the need to risk giving something that is known to have very serious potential side effects? You know, and there's no denying that it has very serious side effects. Now, there are some naysayers that have their head stuck in the sand and they say, well, it's not as bad as people make it out to be, you know, and all this sort of stuff, you know, but, you know, the reality is that until they have seen someone who has had a vaccine reaction and recognized it as such, there's no convincing them. You know, they're just, it's unfortunate, but it just seems to be that way. And I've seen so many people that have seen other physicians with vaccine reactions and being told that, oh, this is something else. It's not the vaccine that's causing these symptoms, you know, and giving them these strange diagnoses that out of the blue with no prior history, no fast. And now, well, you have Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. And all of a sudden now you have non-viral, non-alcoholic liver failure. Okay, where the hell did that come from, right? And all of a sudden, you know, you were playing tennis every week or whatever, you know, healthy person going for a run every day. Now, oh, well, you've got a bad heart that's swollen two sides, you know, the walls are twice as thick as they should be, and you have myocarditis. But it's not the vaccine that did that, you know. So
before we move on to Mark, because I'm a doctor and I'm seeing this as well, why do you think it is in our community that we're having this kind of reaction to all of this? You know, as a physician, as a scientist, you know, I have a degree in medicine and a doctorate in family medicine, and I've never seen this kind of reaction in my life. You know, from the very beginning, I was very confused by the way we reacted to all of this. But of course, this was new, it was novel. We wanted to see what the numbers were looking like, what the science was looking like. But from very early on, we took a very different approach to this. And still, it seems that a lot of people have their heads buried in the sand. They don't want to look at the data. They don't want to change course. Sometimes you just have to know when to give up.
Well, it's also not that new. It's not like we haven't been dealing with SARS viruses for a long time. And so we already had data right from the get-go, right from the start of things in treating SARS viruses. So, you know, and coronaviruses in general. So it's not that new, but it was made out in the news media to be something dangerous and new. And, you know, we still propagate that narrative, you know, and the fact that in a published paper from the National Institute of Health with doctors at the National Institute of Health and Dr. Fauci himself in 2016 published a gain of function study on the SARS-CoV-1 virus and named it as SARS-CoV-2 back then tells us that it is not something new.
Mark, I'm going to let you jump in as a, you know, a Bahamian, as a person, a part of the society, as someone involved in civil society. What are your concerns about this whole idea of vaccinating children and us continuing on this road? Because I know many people, they got their vaccines, they're okay with that. They made those choices. People are a little concerned now with children because, you know, a 79-year-old who wants to try something or who has an understanding and wants to take a risk, fine. Children, no long-term studies, not a deep dive into side effects, over 1,200 side effects of concern listed by Pfizer itself. No conversation on the Pfizer dumps in this country at all.
Right.
What are these some of your concerns? What are your concerns?
Well, they mentioned our red flags, the fact that the FDA tried to suppress the initial trial data for 75 years. That's a big red flag. Why would a regulatory or a body be sued to present that data and then try to hide it for 75 years? So there's clearly something in that Pfizer dump that is concerning. But going back, I think for me, you know, having a child, you have to be very careful about what you're going to put into that child. They have their life in front of them. Also, you have to be wary of the fact that their immune system is developing. You know, it's an early stage, so anything could interfere with that. But it was clear right from the get-go that the Chinese published, I think back in March 2020, that the people dying from COVID were over 70 years old and they had comorbidities. I've known that from studying. They've been told to us by our public health officials, the risk stratification that a child is 1,000 times less likely to get COVID than a person in their 70s. And when you find out that the average age of death in the UK from COVID is 82.5 years, that tells you the risk. But they never tell you that information. I had to find it. In the States, it's 78. That's the average age of death. So clearly the risk is way up there and not down there. And just to go back to your point, you know, to me, it was clear there's no COVID emergency for healthy children. You know, I looked at, you know, the studies that you quoted. I've already seen there was also, you know, because you have to ask for FOIA requests to get basic information. In England, in January, a FOIA request revealed that out of a pediatric population of 7 children, over the last 2 years, only 3 children died from COVID. Does that sound like an emergency to you? So it's clearly, if these are approved for emergency use, that's trial fraud, in my opinion. There's no way you could justify emergency use for a product, you know, for a disease that is not leading that is generally mild for children, from what I understand, from, you know, for healthy children. And, you know, also, you know, I went to the, I think another, you know, I try and get my data from, you know, official sites. And I went to the New England Journal of Medicine that showed that a child was more likely, and this was during 1920, the latest data they had, right when COVID was ripping through our populations, more likely to die from drowning than from respiratory disease, and 12 times more likely to die from a firearm discharge in the state. So respiratory illness is right down there at the bottom. And so for me, you know, also Doc mentioned the immune, the fact that we know from seroprevalence studies that most children have had COVID. And there's been no trial ever done on a child that has had COVID. They've always tested children that haven't had COVID and then had the placebo group with the vaccinated group. So I wanted to really know what happens if your kid had had COVID and got this vaccine, because that's never been studied. There's no data on that. And that to me is concerning, because that could have been easily done, I would have imagined. And so I'm curious why they didn't do that, because there's lots of kids into those trials. But so going back, you know, is there an emergency? From the data, it doesn't look like it, but for parents, safety is my most concern. Maybe we can talk about that, but just an analogy. If you had this nice car, right, and it ticked all your boxes, and you took it out and you loved it, but then they said that every 2,000 drives, you were going to have a serious accident, would you buy that car? Of course you wouldn't. I mean, most people wouldn't. They'd forget about the beauty of the car. So for me as a parent, safety was the most important thing. And these were fast track. Now, I remember when they came out, people said, you know, no stone was unturned, but that can't be true, because I looked at the protocols, the established protocols for, you know, vaccines, 10 years. You have 3 years in animal studies, in vitro and animal studies. You do that for 3 years. Then you have 2 years for phase one, 2 years for phase three, sorry, 2 years for a continued phase two, and then 3 years for phase three. And they've actually compressed that into 5 years. But to do that in 10 months, skip, the phases were combined and they were unblinded. That was the other big red flag for me, that every single trial that these vaccine manufacturers have done, at the end of the trial, they've unblinded the placebo groups. And why would you do that? Because now you have no long-term safety.
No control.
No control. So we are the control. So basically, so that was like, you know, why would they do that? And they would say, I read a few articles justifying that, saying it's ethical, but I can't see how having no long-term safety data out of a random controlled trial, which is the only way you're going to find out unintended problems or unintended benefits. You remember when the measles vaccines were rolled out, they found that the children that got the measles vaccine had much lower excess mortality than children who are unvaccinated. They four or five things that these kids would have died of, they didn't die off. So the measles vaccine was considered to be, you know, you can only find that out by checking it for 3, 4, 5 years. You can't do it for 2 months and then unblind it. So that to me is just a big, big red flag. But so for me, they were not fully tested. And for me, I don't think anyone can honestly put their hand on their heart and say that they're considered safe. Because this is new technology. This isn't like a live viruses, you know, that you normally put into children. And we do know that there are, from the VAERS reports, there have been 114 deaths in children as of June, 457 disabled, and I think over 1,300 myocarditis. So there are some very serious potential side effects that you would have to look at as a parent. And we know that VAERS is underreported. Many years ago, that VAERS could potentially only show 1% of those side effects and those deaths, which is, again, very worrying. So even those figures, though they seem high, they could be a lot higher. So I think that a safety for me.
Safety for you. I think you make a really big point, which I like to stress to people, because people say, you know, what about, you know, what's the issue with vaccination? I will say this, and this may be controversial, but I think at this point we have to just be kind of lay everything. Vaccines in the past are very different what we're calling the COVID-19.
Yeah.
If you have to change a definition to fit something into something else, that is a red flag. And if you do not receive protection, which we couldn't say this a year ago, but it's quite evident that, and I'm saying it as well, that it's going to protect you. So I guess it's okay now, because we live in a world where truth is censored. And there seems to be some issue about being able to state what's right in front of our eyes. But the protection has gone, the idea of protection has gone out the window. We have seen people boosted who have caught COVID. So this whole idea of protecting others, you know, all of that stuff is out of the window. You've seen figures like Dr. Fauci, and now even the President of the United States, they've all caught COVID. So we need to come to that reality. That is just a clear fact. And so the question is, for children who don't have severe disease, what is the reasoning behind it? And the vaccines of the past have gone through rigorous testing. And even when they were started, there were issues. We dealt with those issues. But those things were recognized and rectified, and more safety studies were done.
Right.
What is the issue with this particular drug? I just want to, before I get back to you, Dr. Bethel, there's actually lawsuits going on in the United States about this very same issue. I'm looking at a petition, a citizen's petition, United States Department of Health and Human Services and the Food and Drug Administration, petition for administrative action regarding the revocation of the emergency use authorization granted to the Pfizer biotech COVID-19 vaccine for children 5 through 11, an authorization for this age group. So here we are going down this, and they're having lawsuits in the US about this to reverse these actions. And I'm just gonna go through a couple of the short points that they make out in their statements. The initial granting of the EUA for Pfizer's vaccine 5 to 11 years old was unlawful. This is what the document is accusing the government and the FDA of. There was no emergency EUA was granted. That's what we talked about.
Right.
You don't see the need for emergency use of this vaccine across the entire age group. We talked about the risk factors. Why are we using broad strokes? The clinical trial relied upon to authorize Pfizer vaccine 5 to 11 years old was deficient. We've seen some of these data drops, and we've seen what was done in terms of the information provided for children and even worse, the younger groups, where if you read the information for yourself, regardless of the conclusions, that there were a lot of red flags. Okay, the EUA for Pfizer's vaccine continues to be unlawful because the FDA's benefit risk assessment is gravely flawed, particularly in light of the new data. There continues to be no emergency in this age group. And you can go and check out this document for yourself. The alleged benefits of Pfizer's vaccine for 5 to 11 year olds are heavily outweighed by the known and potential risks. Mm-hmm. These are just some of the things outlined. The known and potential risk from Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine, Pfizer, is a problem. And let me see if there are any more points that I really want to point out. And it also talks about the lack of vaccine effectiveness. We're using a vaccine that's pretty much outdated, pointless, where we've moved on to various variants. And so why are we doing this if the efficacy rates have all dropped?
I read that same citizen's petition. They also say, they state that that follow-up period was intentionally too short. You know, that in the 5 to 11-year-olds, the first cohort was only followed for 2 months after the trial, and the second one was only for 17 days. How are you going to tell from 2 months and 17 days that, you know, these things are safe? So it doesn't seem to me that they're making every effort that they can to do these trials long-term and look at these things properly.
They also talk about similar for the Moderna trials that were underpowered. Dr. Bethel, I'm sure just so much out there.
I'll give myself a headache if I look at all of it. But, you know, the thing is that the other thing that is really kind of a crime is even when in those short windows of time that they were looking and recording side effects. They, even when they had documented, you know, side effects, myocarditis, pericarditis, strokes, you name it, seizure disorders, all kinds of things that started to happen to young adults, anybody actually, in all of the various different trials, most of the time they do not follow up on them to see, well, what happens after. All right, they say they recovered from the myocarditis. Really? Having, being a physician that had two of my teenagers that got the vaccine to go away to college because they happened to be at that time in their life, and my small little population of patients here, I had two, right? So when you do the statistics and patient panel, and I have two out of that, it's not one in 100,000 that this happens to. It happens into one in every couple hundred, you know, one in 1,000. You know, people that this is happening to.
I've never right? heard about so, but they don't follow
up, and they don't follow up on these patients, right, to see, all right, they recovered, really? You know, a year later now, is their lifestyle, are they able to do what they could before? Could they run 100 meters? No, they can't. So how are they saying that these kids have recovered? They're permanently damaged. They're recovered meaning that they're alive. But that's not the same thing as they're now going to have the same productive life as they would have had they not had that reaction.
And, so, and are these side effects being documented anywhere that you see? And I have not three our own registry in this country.
No, locally here, they're not. Well, we've been down this road before. They're not documenting the cases correct, you know, that are reported from, especially not from the private sector. Basically, the numbers that you see on the dashboard are really just basically hospitalized COVID patients, you know, patients that, you know, are brought to the attention of the public system because they're too sick to hide. You know, and that's even still today. I mean, that was the way it was back in the beginning. And maybe you can understand that they wanted to hide the fact that the Bahamas had COVID and all this holy baloney, you know, nonsense. But, you know, here we are, you know, 2.5 years into this. It's not a stigma or a shame, you know, but our numbers still aren't, you know, being counted correctly. Because as a physician, if I have a little surge on the island and 8 families last week, or the week before on a Monday, you know, after a weekend, after the holiday weekend, I had 8 families. So in those families, there's a network of people that all needed treatment, but, you know, it's a consult for all of them. But let's just say there was 8 people, you know, that came in and got tested and reported, but yet you see on the dashboard for the rest of the week after that time, 2 cases, 1 case, this sort of thing. So if I, as one physician, saw 8 people, and their extended families, which you can multiply that number by 4, essentially, you know, I know that the numbers are a joke, you know, and it's disheartening. But, you know, back to your question, is there any following of this? No, there's no recording of any of that. That's none at all, you know, and it's a shame.
We first, before we can even move on to children, need to look at what's happening in adults.
Exactly.
What are our numbers there in terms of side effects? Most of Europe has already kind of moved on. In fact, places like the UK are people for their complications. Mark, as a Bahamian, as a father, there's no liability, it seems. I haven't seen our laws on this, but I'm pretty sure that we also signed no liability clause in terms of getting these.
That was the only way that we would receive the donation, is if we signed that.
Yeah. So how does that feel, knowing that this is being encouraged? And really, you can't look to anyone if there is a problem in terms of a side effect or a serious reaction.
That was a red flag, another red flag, the fact that none of the governments would stand behind the product, you know, and they give unlimited liability protection to the vaccine manufacturers. And that, to me, you can't give them liability against prosecution side effects and then say they're safe. The two to me, I'm quite logical. I'm thinking you can't say safe. And if they're really safe, then you should stand behind them and allow people, if they are injured, to be able to sue the companies direct. But clearly something was in those agreements, which are secret. We haven't seen them. I've seen one or two that were disclosed by whistleblowers. But within them, there's marketing clauses and various other things. So you ask the question of why, we keep, or our public health officials keep going along on this train. Maybe there's something in those agreements that compel them to do that. I don't know, but it would be transparency to be able to see those documents. These are our public health. These are our Bahamians. These are our children. Why would you sign something away secretly? So for me, the fact that that was all done behind closed doors, that didn't sit very well with me. Going back to that safety thing, they also said, that the vaccine would stay in the arm, and there was no evidence for that. That was just made up. Yeah. There was no evidence because it's a novel vaccine. It was never tested in human. It was tested in humanized rats. And even that, the biodistribution studies, they haven't released them. Hopefully we'll get them in the Pfizer dump, but we only saw one through a FOIA request in Japan that showed that within 2 days, the lipid nanoparticles were ending up in the bone marrow and the ovaries of the mice.
A few studies that show that actually the genetic code of the liver cells, because it's easier to biopsy the liver, safely for people, has actually been permanently altered. So this idea that it's mRNA and it doesn't, reverse transcribe into DNA and insert into our genome. Well, we know that there are reverse transcriptase enzymes in our cells there for a reason to do that. And it's no surprise that it is inserted into our genome in some of our cells. And there it sits, sometimes dormant until some point in the future when it decides to go into a toxin-producing splurge at some point in the future. And what do you think that trigger is that would cause those cells to go on a spike toxin producing splurge? What could it be that we're exposed to? So there it goes. So what we're seeing is that that the people that have had the vaccine are, from my experience currently, are the ones that are getting the sickest. All right. I had no patients in my practice die until this year. And all of them that have died have been vaccinated. Die from COVID infections. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple that had their initial series, and then at Christmas time they got their booster, all right, and they got COVID in February. One of the couple almost died. I treated them. They pulled through that, only to catch COVID yet again in February, and both of them died. Now I think they died in part because the hospital gave them remdesivir. And I use the word incorrectly because that is what it is. It is a death-inducing medicine known to cause kidney failure. And that's essentially what happened to them when they caught COVID the second time.
I'm really glad you brought that up. I have a serious problem with our use of that drug.
I hope we're not using it anymore. Nowhere else is.
I know that I questioned why the Bahamian people were being experimented with that particular drug. I did not get a lot of answers. So
Organization itself put out a notice in November of 2020 and said that it was dangerous. It causes kidney failure, amongst other things. And it should not be used for COVID, A, because it's not effective, and B, because it's too risky and dangerous.
So maybe we should look to see if we actually got money from that organization to actually...
Well, we know that that's what talks about Paxlovid, briefly, and the fiasco that's happening with that, but, which is another Pfizer medicine. But I think before we delve off into that, I think why don't we look briefly, if you'll allow me, just to look at the actual data that was submitted to the FDA, since everyone looks at the United States as the premier, regulatory, example. And for us, the closest one. In the Pfizer data that was submitted to get approval or for emergency use, so it's not approval, it's not, regular, but it's, some sort of approval that they got. They had this study that was 4,500 young children between the ages of 6 months and 4 years old. And so many of the children had to drop out after the first dose basically 3,000 of them could be doses. They had to drop out because of side effects. That is, this is from their data. Okay, this is what they submitted to the FDA. And then out of that remaining approximate 1,500, it was actually 1,678, but, you know, just keeping the numbers so simple, 1,500 people that actually got the full three doses, there was a placebo arm that got, nothing and, you know, unvaccinated. They did find that when they were, by the time they whittled it down to just 10 children. And they determined that because they could determine that there was an 80% efficacy out of that small, tiny cohort, out of that big cohort that started out at 4,500. And they found that three of the vaxxed, the fully vaxxed, got COVID and seven got COVID, right? And so that's what they had to do. They had to whittle it down to that, to finally say, well, look at that. There's an improvement. So they basically are basing the entire approval on 10 children. That is just insane to even think about, knowing that they started off with 4,000 plus and whittled it down to just a sample pool of 10. And then, but the telltale sign that the criminals know that they're criminals is that in the document, Pfizer advises the FDA that the data that is submitted here is not enough evidence to grant permission for emergency use authorization. So then you ask yourself, well, why did this? We know that that's just a legal clause that was put in there, because when the thing hits the fan, they'll say, well, wait a minute. We advised the FDA of all of the problems and the fact that all these kids couldn't tolerate it and they had to drop out due to side effects and stuff. I mean, so let's switch to Moderna. A similar story, but Moderna's in a way even more egregious. They had 4,200 children in their study in the same age group that they submitted. And it's two doses that they need for theirs. But basically, I'm not going to go through it in as much detail, but basically they found, well, after they whittled their sample pool down to a smaller sample pool, they found that even then it was only 43% effective. This is their own reporting, 43% effective at reducing the chance of catching COVID. All right.
And for a virus that 99.9% get through unscathed.
Unscathed, yeah.
Well, the endpoint was mild COVID. That's all the trials that were there to determine mild, whether it could help with mild COVID. But also looking at that, interesting, when you look at that trial, Dr. Toby Rogers, he did a big takedown of it. But Pfizer actually stopped the trial and they started vaccinating the placebo group in September.
Yes, I was going to mention that too. Yes.
And then it failed, right? And then in November, they figured out it failed. And then they got some other kids. And so what the early phase that failed showed that the vaccinated kids got COVID in much, much higher proportion than the unvaccinated. And you probably have the figures there, but there was something like 300% more. Yeah. So it actually, from that original data, you could almost assume that, you know, the vaccine were actually possibly creating.
Causing harm. COVID. Yes, exactly. Yeah. The data said the vaccine is causing harm.
And we know that now with the studies coming out about immunosuppression with multiple boosters. We do have a clip, Dr. Craig, who actually does kind of confirm all this you're saying, but we have a quick caller. Let's see if we could take the caller and then just call. You're on the air.
Good evening to all of my heroes, local heroes. I sound like Mark Parmesan. I know Dr. Bethel. And so, Dr. Archer, you know, of course, I'm ecstatic about this conversation. I'm sitting and listening. I'm actually recording it, right? Hello?
Hello? Yes, we're listening.
Yeah, and so, you know, I had read some of the released data from the Pfizer clinical trials, and it's saying exactly what you guys are saying. And so what I remember was there was inconsistencies in the adjuvants, like microliters, according to lot numbers. And so what that simply means is there was no consistency in what they was putting in them according to the lot. I knew this, and also... They haven't collected, in the research, They didn't do studies with children that were co-vaxxed with other vaccinations, you know, like they have to get other vaccinations during this time. And so they didn't did any studies to show what happened along with the COVID-19 vaccinations. But in all, I'm vexed with the local health officials that seems puppetized. And it's really ridiculous as the amount of information. But I saw something on the internet recently on my high school chat in which they said a young child recently fall out all of a sudden, right? And so we, of course, you know about the myocarditis. But what the people must bear in mind is the CDC, those are really controlling this information on what is totally, and what is a vax from unvax person. If someone has one vaccination and they get an adverse event, because they don't want any indemnity, they don't qualify that as a vax person. So they actually have they have parameters and all kind of scrutiny before you even classify it as an adverse event. So they're controlling the paradigm. All right, and it seems to me it's about our local officials. They, you know, of course, I've mentioned most of these things, and I heard Dr. Palmer mentioned humanized mice. But Dr. D, I discussed this before. When you humanize a mice, you could actually humanize them to suit your study to get the results you want. This is what humanized means. It doesn't mean that a mice is different from a human. So they humanize the mice to get the results they want. All right. And this is not fair. And so with all this information coming out, and they're still pushing for this, we even saw where the lack of during the pandemic, they withheld panaceas, like treatments like ivermectin and hydrochlorine, and know that these were effective because on the WHO website itself, they have this drug as being dispensed over 1.7 billion times to people, and it's a magic drug, but yet still they classify it as being deadly to people. And have a good night.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much, caller. I don't know if we even have time to go to Craig. Let's play a little clip, and then we'll come right back, because we're almost out of time. It's just like that.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about. So, producer, if you could just start playing her clip, maybe we'll go through at least half of it, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up our thoughts on all of this. So if you have that lined up, producer, that would be great.
I'm a diagnostic pathologist and I am co-chair of the Heart Group. And I wanted to take you through the evidence that Pfizer just presented to the FDA on the 6 month to 4-year-old children. There's an awful lot about this trial that has shocked me and I think will shock you too. The trial recruited 4,526 children aged from 6 months to 4 years old. 3,000 of these children did not make the trial. That is a huge number, two-thirds of them. Why was there this drop-off? That needs to be answered. And without an answer to that, on that basis alone, this trial should be deemed null and void. So what did the trial show? Well, they defined severe COVID as children who had a slightly raised heart rate or a few more breaths per minute. There were 6 children aged 2 to 4 who had severe COVID in the vaccine group, but only 1 in the placebo group. So on that basis, the likelihood that this vaccine is actually causing severe COVID is higher than the likelihood that it isn't. There was actually 1 child who was hospitalized in this trial. They had a fever and a seizure. They had been vaccinated. So now let's turn to what they defined as any COVID. And what they did was to utterly twist the data. They vaccinated the children and they waited 3 weeks after. In that 3-week period, 34 of the vaccinated children got COVID and only 13 in the placebo group, which worked out as a 30% increased chance of catching COVID in that 3-week period if you were vaccinated. So they ignored that data. And then there was an 8-week gap between the second dose and the third dose, where again, children were getting plenty of COVID in the vaccine arm. So they ignored that data. There was then 7 weeks after the third dose, which they also ignored, which meant that in the end, they had ignored 97% of the COVID that occurred during the trial. And they just looked at tiny numbers, so tiny. In the end, they were comparing 3 children in the vaccine arm who had COVID with 7 in the placebo arm. And they said that this showed the vaccine was effective. So they measured how many of these children actually managed to catch COVID twice in the 2-month follow-up period. And there were 12 children who all but 1 of them were vaccinated, mostly with 3 doses. So you have to wonder what on earth their thinking when the claim of reduction in COVID was only 4 children. And here we have 12 children who got COVID twice, 11 of them vaccinated. So let's just recap. They recruited 4,500 children, 3,000 of them dropped out. And in the end, they're claiming this vaccine works on the basis of 3 COVID cases versus 7, a difference of 4 children only. And all of this on a backdrop of a disease which doesn't affect children and with no long-term safety data. We have to ask how an ethics committee could have approved this trial in babies. Babies are not at risk from COVID. And now we have Pfizer, who are presenting this as evidence to the FDA for an emergency use authorization. Emergency use authorization is meant for a situation where there's a risk of serious injury or death. Now, children under 5 are not at risk of serious injury or death from COVID. In fact, in their own trial, they had to make up other ways of measuring the problem because there was no serious injury or death. Now, originally, these products were sold as actually also reducing transmission. Now, it would be completely unethical to use young children as a human shield, but we now know that they don't reduce transmission. The WHO have stopped claiming and they reduce transmission. So that argument doesn't apply either. Now, if we just turn to safety, what they did is they followed up the patients for 6 weeks before unblinding them and vaccinating them. So the children who'd had placebo an average of 6 weeks and then given the vaccine. So that's your safety control gone forever. The fact that this trial existed at all is unbelievable. There are other issues in there which I haven't highlighted, but those are the key ones. Parents should be demanding that the decision makers explain themselves.
Okay, great. I mean, I think, you know, she touched on all the things that we kind of discussed. I don't understand how in the Bahamas we're talking about this is going to keep the children in school when obviously the all, you know, the benefits to are not there.
No.
All we see is risks, especially with this age group. It's undeniable. And, you know, I really look deep within because I know this is a hard time to be a physician. That's a critical thinker that looks at the evidence and is willing to say it. But I could not go without people hearing the facts about this. And we were able to join me. So we're kind of wrapping up. Is the hour goes so quickly, guys, especially when we have so much information. But Kevin, I'll let Mark go kind of like wrap up your thoughts on all of this. Yeah. What do you want people to know and feel about this? And then we're going to, Dr. Bethel, I'm going to let you wrap it up.
Yeah, I think the, you know, a lot of what just came out, it just seems to me the regulatory bodies are very lackadaisical. They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing to protect us. They always said right at the beginning, because we're rushing it, we're going to tell you, we're going to watch the safety signals. In a FOIA request in September of last year, it found out the CDC had never monitored the VAERS system of never. They had to be sued under FOIA to admit that. So they haven't even been checking for, but as I mentioned earlier, it's about safety. You know, my child has a whole life in front of her. We know that these vaccines were never, the distribution studies were never done on humans. There were never any studies to assess genotoxicity, carcinogenicity, reproductive, or mixing up my words, developmental toxicity, or immunotoxicity. So we have no way of knowing how these novel vaccines will affect our children's fertility, development, or autoimmunity, or interact with their bodies in a harmful way. We will never have that data. And, you know, as we said, there's as we determined from the data, there isn't an emergency emergency in children. And yet there are a lot of things to think about in terms of the long-term safety of these products. And I see them as a non-solution to a non-problem.
Okay, Dr. Bethel, you have Mark. A minute. Tell.
Yeah. So we do have data, but it's not provided by the vaccine manufacturers. We're following up, we're getting released. So there is data, it's just not provided up front like it should have been. I'm gonna just mention some few other things because there's been a recent development in the UK where AstraZeneca was the proud boy. Right? And we got it here first. They have a new outbreak in the UK and in Ireland of a novel case of severe childhood hepatitis that are developing in children. And the culprit has been identified as an adenovirus type 2. And guess what the vector was in the AstraZeneca? Adenovirus type 2. All right? So this is very serious. All right? They don't want to, the news people don't want to connect the dots, but the spokesmen for the pharmaceutical companies are quickly up. All right? So there's some very serious, I mean, this is a devilish gift that just doesn't stop giving. So everybody, my final comments is stay tuned. This story is not over.
Okay, we're basically out of time. I just want everybody to be safe. Parents, go out there, do your research. Sometimes you have to dig a little bit deeper. Sadly, we're living in a time where information is censored, but it is out there. There are lots of studies that are out there. We didn't get into any of the preprint studies or anything that's coming down the line. So we need to be vigilant. I'm hoping that the powers that be will take a look at this information and reverse their decision and really think about what they're doing and what they're doing to the Bahamian people and whether this is the road that we want to go down, because we have lots of examples around the world to tell us that we can do this differently, we can take a different approach. And I think people will be happy if we see that type of thought and analysis. Our officials, our policymakers, it's time to really, you know, take a stop and look at what we're doing. And that's going to be helpful for all of us. I want to thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Kevin Baffert, and being courageous doing this show with me. Lord help us all. And thank you out there. Share this program. I think everyone needs to know that there's other information out there and to look at some of those resources and make that decision for yourself, because it's here and we're going to have to deal with it. I want to thank you all for listening, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. This is The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Archer. Good night, and we'll see you next week. Thanks.